was a question. He wants to talk about systematic theology, and he wants to talk about systematic theology in a way that has an awful lot of, instead of being first for us, it's first in themselves. It's entering into a different universe of discourse. And he said, is this appropriate? And I said, well, what could be more appropriate to a workshop entitled The Morality of Inquiry? Because in some sense, one way of saying what Lonergan was all about was the morality of inquiry, and importing the morality of inquiry into theology where it had been lost. And what happens, as many of you already know, is that because the situation is the way it is in the schools where we teach and so forth, very few of us have had the opportunity to really do systematics and to think about systematics in the rigorous way that Lonergan invites us to do. And perhaps thank God that seeing this emergency, Bob Doran has turned to this and done it in a major way, in a unique way, in a singular way. And so I'm just so glad that he asked me the question so that I could say, by all means, please come. So thank you very much for welcoming me.
Thank you, Fred. I am aware that the relevance of what I'm going to say to the topic is definitely going to appear a good deal more remote than the relevance of what we heard from David Burrell this morning. But I got some help from David in terms of talking about the pertinence of this to the topic of the morality of inquiry following upon 9/11. Namely, the statements that David made about the criteria for adjudicating competing narratives, namely the inner consistency of the narrative and the question, what do you do with the other? It seems to me that systematics, first of all, is not an end in itself. It is oriented to an eighth functional specialty, communications, whose task is to tell Christian narratives, and whose mediated object, in one paper of Lonergan's that has yet to be published, is the world. The mediated object of communications is the world. And it seems to me that systematics, of all of the functional specialties, has a particular responsibility for the inner consistency of the narratives that will be communicated as the world is mediated through the communications Christian boxes and preaching. And systematics also, and increasingly in our time, as systematics will be entering upon a world in which it must take responsibility for a Christian theology of the world religions, systematics of all of the functional specialties will have a particular responsibility for answering the question, what do we do? How do we deal with, how do we meet, the other? Also, David said that to the extent that a social body is built on a contradiction, some kind of violence or abuse or mounting dysfunction is inevitable. And systematics, from the clearest statements of Lonergan about it, has the task of reconciling apparent contradictions and catalyzing movements beyond real contradictions. And so it has the quite relevant existential responsibility of making sure that the church is not allowed to build on contradictions. And I think we're all aware today of the need that the church has for that. I hope that this paper will, feedback that I'll get from it and what will come from that feedback will probably be the culmination of a series of things that I've been doing over the last 5 years or so on method in systematics. And then what I really have the dream of doing is gathering some people, because I think systematics has got to be a collaborative enterprise. I think the habit resides in a community and not simply in an individual. But get to gather some people to begin actually doing systematic theology as a group. I have 6 sections. It reminds me of Lonergan giving the paper in St. Louis. I was there. The response of the Jesuit as priest and apostle in the modern world. I was sitting next to a Jesuit who deceased, who had died, Peter Fleming. And Lonergan got up and very authoritatively said, "I will treat my topic under the following 6 headings." And Peter just said, "Oh God, here we go." I have the following divisions. The thesis, which is the longest part of the, so if it seems long, the others are shorter. The hypothesis, previous discussion of the issue, a distinction, history and the special categories, and glimpsing some implications. The fundamental thesis that I'd like to put forth is that there is at hand a unified field structure for the functional specialty systematics. And a subsidiary thesis is that previous attempts, including my own, to state what that structure is have not quite hit it off accurately, even as they have made contributions to the accurate presentation. Think here, if you're familiar with Grace and Freedom, and particularly of Lonergan's dissertation, think of the first chapter in the dissertation on the form of the development of the theology of grace from Augustine to Aquinas, on the movement from the specific theorem of moral impotence and the need for God's grace, healing grace, gratia sanans, the specific theorem, to the generic theorem of the discovery of the theorem of the supernatural by Philip the Chancellor, and then to the synthesis of the two in Thomas in the Prima Secundae. And how there was a tendency to try to take the specific theorem as the full solution to the problem, and then that didn't work. And then to take the generic theorem as the full solution to the problem, and that didn't work. And what worked was the synthesis of the specific gratia sanans, moral impotence, and then healing grace, and the theorem of the supernatural gratia elemans, elegans. What is meant, and I think that's what's been happening in this discussion, I think something similar. A specific theorem has been offered, a generic theorem has been offered. There's been a tendency to take either of those as a full solution, and what's really required is a synthesis of the two. What is meant by speaking of a unified field structure? The unified field structure would be the basic organizing conception for the entire functional specialty of systematics. Or in Danny Mansour's words, that's what some of you heard last year, the paper that he delivered here last year, the systematic conception, it would be the systematic conception of systematic conceptions. Something that is capable of guiding the ongoing genetic development of the entire synthetic understanding of the mysteries of faith and of the other elements that enter into systematic theology. It would guide all work at bringing these elements into a synthetic unity. It would stand in continuity with the implicit unified field structure of the Summa Theologiae of Thomas Aquinas, which marks what I think we might call the first great plateau in the unfolding of systematic theology. And it also will leave itself open to further enrichments and differentiations analogous to those that it is adding to the Thomas conception. So it's not an end. To draw on another of Danny Mansour's articulations, the basic organizing conception will stand to systematics as the periodic table stands to chemistry. But it will also stand to a contemporary systematics as the theorem of the supernatural and the elaboration of auxilium divinum that Lonergan studied in his doctoral dissertation, those two, joined to Aristotelian metaphysics, stood to the emergent systematics of the Middle Ages as it came to its first great synthesis in Aquinas. And it will be a genetic development upon that structure that is found in the Summa. the conjunction of the theorem of the supernatural and of actual operative grace on the one hand with Aristotelian metaphysics on the other, provided, if not a unified field structure for all systematics, at least the organizing conception for the theology of grace at the time Thomas wrote the Prima Secunda. But an adequate contemporary field structure would make systematics historically conscious and would place it in tune with modern scientific methods and achievements. A contemporary systematics must be able to address problems and relate to theological functional specialties that did not exist. They had not yet emerged at all at the time that Thomas did his work. There is no critical history in the sense that Lonergan means critical history. In the 13th century, there is no scientific exegesis. It had not yet emerged. There is no methodical dialectic in the sense in which Lonergan is pursuing that in a methodical way, because there was no historical consciousness in our sense of that term. Like the medieval organizing conception, this unified field structure combines a specifically theological element with a more general set of categories. The theorems of the supernatural and of actual operative grace gave the specifically theological component in the medieval conception of grace, and Aristotle's metaphysics provided its general categories, and his psychologies. The principal specifically theological element in the unified field structure now at hand, I believe, is a four-point hypothesis proposed in Lonergan's Systematics of the Trinity. The hypothesis differentiates the theorem of the supernatural, sublates it and differentiates it into a set of connections between the four Trinitarian relations, eternity, filiation, active spiration, passive spiration, and the created supernatural participations in the divine life, in those relations. The secondary active existence of the incarnation as a created participation in paternity, sanctifying grace as a created participation in active spiration, the habit of charity as a created participation in the past inspiration that is the Holy Spirit, and the light of glory a created participation in filiation. And so that hypothesis, which I'll read to you as number two there, enables a synthetic understanding of the four mysteries of Trinity, Incarnation, Grace, and the Last Things. Now, over the past few years, there has developed a discussion at the Lonergan Research Institute in Toronto, in some of the systematic courses at Regis, and at the Lonergan Workshop here, as to whether this four-point hypothesis is adequate in itself to function as a unified field structure for systematics. That discussion has spilled over into several publications. At least two presentations at the Lonergan Workshop addressed this issue, one by myself as part of a larger paper in the year 2000, 2 years ago, and one by Daniel Mansour last year. I now want to add to the discussion, and I want to add by proposing that however synthetic the four-point hypothesis may be, it does not stand on its own. It is not enough to unify a synthetic theological understanding. And to accept it as sufficient seems to me to be similar to the tendency that there was after the discovery of the theorem of the supernatural to accept the generic theorem of the supernatural as the full solution to the problem of grace. It seems similar to that. So first, and these are the reasons that I would say that it is not enough, while a specifically theological element in the unified field structure is provided by the four-point hypothesis, there are other specifically theological realities, and so other special theological categories that a unified field structure must integrate. And I will argue, particularly down in number four, that they cannot be mapped adequately onto the four-point hypothesis. And I'm thinking here of categories that regard revelation, redemption, the church, the sacraments, and Christian praxis in the world. While all of these are intimately related to the elements expressed in that hypothesis, Trinity, Incarnation, Grace, and Eschatology, they're not organized by that hypothesis alone. More is required. Second, while the integration of these further theological realities will not involve adding something completely extraneous to the four-point hypothesis, Still, that integration must locate the divine missions, which are at the heart of the four-point hypothesis, in creation, and especially in the history, whose dynamics of progress and decline are part of the focus of the divine missions in the first place. If possible, the divine missions of the Word and the Holy Spirit must be located in creation and in history, not vaguely, but precisely. And I believe that this can be done only through a theory of history. It can be done through a scale of values. If you've got the page that I distributed that was over in the Emporium, I did this in terms of the scale of values on that diagram there, which as a key to the theory of history will form an additional component in this unified field structure. But this means that these theological realities must be integrated not only with one another, but also with the order of the universe and with other realities constitutive of human history, social structures, so on and so forth, all of those realities that Lonergan mentions in his diagram of the human good. That is to say, with realities that are known by sciences and scholarly disciplines other than theology. An additional set of sets of categories beyond those rooted in the four-point hypothesis and beyond specifically theological categories is required if the theological synthesis is to take place. This is just another way of saying what Lonergan has said and so clearly, that general theological categories shared with other disciplines are required, and they are required even for the adequate theological understanding of specifically theological realities, because these realities function in history, in time, in creation. As the medieval theorem of the supernatural needed a metaphysical system, if it was to mediate religion and a cultural matrix in the time of Thomas Aquinas, so the four-point hypothesis requires general categories shared with other disciplines if the divine missions that are at the core of the hypothesis are to be located in relation to their historical occasions and effects. More precisely, to quote Lonergan, a mission is for a purpose, and the divine missions are for the purpose of establishing and confirming interpersonal relations. First of all, of course, interpersonal relations between us and the divine persons, but also, based on those, greater interpersonal relations among ourselves. And interpersonal relations are the core element in the structure of the human good that is coincident, for Lonergan, with the immanent intelligibility of history. And so understanding the divine missions entails understanding the history that the Word was sent to redeem from the alternating cycles of progress and decline, and that the Holy Spirit is sent to renew with the outpouring of self-sacrifice. In many ways, I could say that this is the point that I made a couple of years ago, but I wasn't precise enough about just where these general categories are to be located. And this came to me again as I read in the past months Lonergan's response to a questionnaire on philosophy that was sent to him by the Jesuit Curia in Rome when they were reviewing the state of philosophical studies. Society of Jesus. Unfortunately, his paper had very little effect on what they were trying to do. But perhaps we can still redeem its point. The set of sets of general categories will be based in the cognitional theory, epistemology, and metaphysics of insight, in the existential ethics of insight and method in theology, and in the theory of history proposed by Lonergan over the span of his writings, and I hope complemented by contributions that I tried to make in the theology and the dialectics of history. So the thesis is the following, that taken together, the four-point theological hypothesis and what Lonergan in that paper, that response on philosophy, what he calls the basic and total science, the Grund- und Gesamtwissenschaft, namely, his cognitional theory, epistemology, metaphysics, and existential ethics, and the theory of history that flows out from those, Okay. That is what provides the basic framework, the set of terms and relations of the unified field structure for systematic theology. And that's a development on the position that I expressed 2 years ago, because there I limited it to the four-point hypothesis and the theory of history. But even insight itself, I mean, even method in theology itself makes it clear that the general categories, basically when he tells you what the general categories are, he gives you a summation of the whole of insight. And so those, you've got to take all that into consideration. And in that paper on the response to the questionnaire on philosophy, he makes it very clear. This is the source of the general categories. This Grund und Gesamtwissenschaft, this basic and total science, cognitional theory, epistemology, metaphysics, and the existential insight, existential ethics that he himself has proposed in those two books. So again, if I may quote from the response to the questionnaire on philosophy. Theology sublates philosophy to define its special categories, while it derives from philosophy its general categories. And by philosophy is meant precisely the Grund und Gesamtwissenschaft that I just referred to, namely cognitional theory, epistemology, metaphysics, and existential ethics. So my thesis would be that with the four-point theological hypothesis and the philosophical positions that for the most part are in place in insight and that are complemented where necessary by later developments, we have everything we need to begin constructing a systematic theology. We don't need anything more to begin, to get going. Every further category that will emerge in systematics will be validated by its connection with the categories that frame that field structure. Lonergan says as much, I believe, in one section of his response to the questionnaire on philosophy. And I'm quoting again from that document. The Christian religion as lived is the sublation of the whole of human living. It follows at once that to thematize the sublation of the whole of human living is a task beyond the competence of theology as a particular science or particular discipline. But theology can perform that task only by broadening its horizon, by uniting itself with philosophy as the basic and total science. Again, from the same document, theology is the sublation of philosophy, or philosophy is the basic and total science of human living. A Christian religion as lived is the sublation of the whole of human living. Hence, the Christian religion as thematized is the sublation of the basic and total science of human living. And at one point, that sublation will yield a theologically transformed theory of history. That is where the principle, though not the soul, but the principle, general categories of systematics will be applied. So that's the thesis. Secondly, the four-point hypothesis itself, I'm just going to read that. It's familiar to those of you who have studied De Neutrino Pars Systematica or who have followed this discussion to date on the question of a unified field structure. But I quote here in translation from De Neutrino Pars Systematica, pages 234-235. There are four real divine relations, really identical with divine being. And so four special ways of grounding an imitation or participation ad extra of God's own life. And there are four absolutely supernatural created realities. They are never found in an unformed or indeterminate state. They're always fully formed. They are the secondary act of existence of the incarnation, sanctifying grace, the habit of charity, and the light of glory. Thus, it can appropriately, can appropriately be maintained that the secondary act of existence of the incarnation is a created participation of paternity. The divine word, imminent Trinity, does not speak, it is spoken. The incarnate word speaks, but speaks only what it hears from the Father. And so it has a special relation to the Son. That sanctifying grace is a created participation of active spiration, and so that it bears a special relation to the Holy Spirit. Proceeds from the active spiration of the Father and the Son. That the habit of charity is a created participation of the passive spiration that is the Holy Spirit, and so that it has a special relation to the Father and the Son. And that the light of glory is a created participation of filiation, that perfectly leads the children of adoption back to the Father. It's an astounding theological vision. It pulls together so many things in two short paragraphs. It explicitly embraces the doctrines of the triune God, of the incarnate Word, of the inhabitation of the Holy Spirit, and of the last things. And it does so in such a way that the mysteries affirmed in these doctrines are related synthetically to one another. So it presents in a systematic order some of the principal realities named by the special categories, those categories peculiar to theology. Thirdly, the previous discussion of the issue. The discussion of these issues to which I've already alluded has been focused for us in two papers by Daniel Mansour. The first is entitled The Categories Gratia in Creata et Creata, in Uncreated and Created Grace, and the Functional Specialty Systematics. That paper was presented for discussion at a Lonergan Research Institute graduate seminar in Toronto on the 18th of November, 1999. It has not been published. The second paper, The Four-Point Hypothesis and the Special Theological Categories, was delivered here last year and will be published, I presume, in the proceedings of that workshop. The state of the question is adequately displayed, I believe, in these two papers. And so I'm going to summarize particularly the first one and then just say a little bit about what Danny adds to that in the second. The second repeats many of the general points made in the first, but goes on to develop a much more complete argument in favor of an antecedent likelihood that the four-point hypothesis would provide the integrating principle. And I think that, you know, I was into that too at one point, but I think that's the tendency to take the generic theorem as the full solution. And I think that we need to balance it out with something more than that. The first paper that you haven't seen or heard here frames the question in terms of a problem raised by Henri Rondet in his book, The Grace of Christ. Rondet states that Western Catholic thought on grace has been one-sided. The questions of grace and freedom, grace and merit, justification and predestination are divorced from the emphases of the Greek fathers on divinization, adoption, union with Christ, and the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. There is, says Rondet, in Western Catholic theology a split between the tract on grace and the treatise on the Trinity, which discusses the mission of the Holy Spirit. Many people went through those treatises without ever seeing a connection between those two. Created grace has been in the foreground of Western scholastic theology. Rahner's made the same point. While the gift of the Holy Spirit has been severely underemphasized. Mansour claims that the final chapter of De Deutrino Pars Systematica overcomes this trend. Some earlier attempts to overcome this error in perspective, namely those of Matthias Schaben in the 19th century and Karl Rahner in the 20th, proved inadequate because of their use of formal or quasi-formal causality as a way of understanding God's self-communication. And so the relation between the gift of the uncreated Holy Spirit and the created grace on which the Western paradigm placed its emphasis. The integration of the two emphases is achieved in principle, it would seem, in Lonergan's treatment of the divine missions, and perhaps only there. But Mansour's question goes further than simply seeking a more satisfactory theory on this precise issue. He asks whether there can be found in Lonergan's writings, and especially in his theology of the missions, a more comprehensive perspective, and I'm quoting him here, quoting Mansour, a more comprehensive perspective that would not only successfully overcome the split, but also weigh against any such split or disconnection, and systematically favor and promote the systematic understanding of the mysteries of faith. He frames the question more precisely by appealing to what Lonergan says about systematic conceptions. A systematic conception is one that expresses an understanding that is virtually sufficient for the resolution of all the questions of some systematic treatise. It is the organizing and integrating principle of the tract, expressing as it does the comprehensive understanding that mediates the relation of every less comprehensive conception in the tract to every other less comprehensive conception in the same tract. Mansour goes on from that notion to ask whether there are systematic conceptions of systematic conceptions. That is to say, systematic conceptions that function as organizing and integrating principles for other systematic conceptions. And finally, he raises the question, is there one systematic conception that can function as the organizing and integrating principle for every other systematic conception? If there is, he says, and I quote, it would be the conception that expresses an understanding of the organizing and integrating principle that is virtually sufficient for the resolution of all questions in the functional specialty systematics, that is, in every tract in systematic theology. It would mediate the relation of every less comprehensive conception in the whole of systematics to every other less comprehensive conception in the whole of systematics. Mansour cites both Matthew Lamb and myself as alluding to what might be a candidate for such a status in systematic theology, namely the four-point hypothesis. Moreover, he argues that an appropriate name for such an organizing conception would be a unified field structure. He chooses that name in preference to axiom, as in Karl Rahner's term Grundaxiom, the immanent trinity is the economic trinity and vice versa, and again in preference to unified field theory, the term used in physics. Axiom, he says, suggests something self-evident, or perhaps a fundamental proposition from which one can draw conclusions logically. And neither of these characterizations applies to the four-point hypothesis. And the unified field theory that physicists desire to achieve would bring physics, at least in its present phase, to a close. Whereas the four-point hypothesis, or for that matter, whatever one accepts as a unified field structure, would do anything but bring systematics to a close. In a sense, it would enable it to begin by providing its fundamental organizing and integrating principle. It would enable the construction of the systematics that to date remains, for all practical purposes, not yet assembled. Again, to quote Mansour, just as metaphysics is the whole in knowledge, but not the whole of knowledge, so the hypothesis or any other unified field structure might be considered the whole in systematics, but not the whole of systematics. Thus, the question is whether the four-point hypothesis may be virtually sufficient for the resolution of all questions in functional specialty systematics, where virtually sufficient does not have a logical meaning, but a heuristic one. And still, a caveat is added in his paper, namely, and I'm quoting, though it would certainly function heuristically in systematics, the hypothesis is not purely heuristic, for it definitely contains theological content. After discussing some of the difficulties that are presented by the hypothesis and relating them in a very creative way to what Lonergan says in the third part of De Constitutione Christi about the classification and resolution of the truths we know about God, Mansour proposes in the first of these two papers a test of the viability of the hypothesis as a unified field structure for systematics. And this is important because I'm going to come back to it. And he says, take some or all of the five sets of special theological categories enumerated by Lonergan in Foundations and actually attempt to work out tentatively the categories belonging to each set. Then transfer whatever categories you have derived in Foundations into systematics and try to map them onto the proposed unified field structure. If it is truly a unified field structure for systematics, it would provide the organizing principle integrating all the categories of all the five sets. To the extent that you continued to succeed in mapping the categories onto the hypothesis, to that extent you continue to confirm the hypothesis as indeed a unified field structure for systematics. It's a very good test. In this regard, Mansour speaks of some categories being mapped onto the structure through their connection with the four absolutely supernatural realities, understood as participations in the four real subsistent relations. Moreover, if one supposes that the categories in each of the five sets are intrinsically irreducible to any of the categories of the other sets, then not only will there be a permanent diversity in systematics that no unified field structure will abolish, but also with each successful mapping of categories onto the field structure, the structure itself while retaining its identity as an organizing principle, will be enriched and rendered more complex. That was his initial framing of the question, and I think it's a very good framing of the question. In his second paper, the one that he delivered here last year, he begins the test. He begins to attempt mapping the five sets of categories onto the four-point hypothesis. He insists that he has no intention of adopting a definitive position as to whether it's possible and theologically sound and fruitful to do this. He says, all I propose to offer is a set of inchoate considerations that perhaps may incline one to regard the attempt to bring the four-point hypothesis and the special theological categories together as a worthwhile and promising line for subsequent investigations. Those considerations are, they may be inchoate, but if you heard or have read Danny's paper from last year, they're nonetheless quite complex, and I'm not going to summarize the arguments here. Suffice it to say that he begins by asserting an antecedent likelihood that the four-point hypothesis will provide the organizing, integrating principle for the five sets of categories. His paper builds on that initial assertion, but it's simply an antecedent likelihood. He's not making any definitive claims. Okay, number four, a distinction. I'll review the five sets of theological categories briefly later in the paper, but I want to indicate now my own position on the issue precisely as Danny has framed it. And my position is twofold. Secondly, when we hear that the categories are religious experience, the religious community, the source of our love, authenticity and inauthenticity in Christianity, progress and decline in history. Those are the five sets. In my view, only the third set, the triune source of the love that the categories of religious experience have spoken about, I think only the third set of special categories can be completely mapped onto the four-point hypothesis. The mapping of that third set will resolve the initial problem with which Mansour began, namely the divorce between Trinitarian theology and the theology of grace, and the imbalance and loss of perspective in the relations between the theological conceptions of uncreated and created grace. But I believe that any attempt to map the other sets onto the four-point hypothesis is really reducing the other sets to the third set. And I don't think that that's legitimate. And if the other sets cannot be mapped without remainder onto the four-point hypothesis, then clearly more is needed if we are to arrive at a unified field structure for the functional specialty. And that on Mansour's test itself, not even all the special categories can be adequately mapped onto that. Secondly, however, I want to make what I think is an important distinction. It's one thing to integrate the special categories, and it's something further to integrate the functional specialty systematics. Because systematics is more than the special categories. It's always a tendency to try to make it simply that, but that's the Bonaventurian over against the Thomist orientation. Systematics is more than the special categories, however integrated their presentation may be. Monaghan's method and the emphases that I've tried to highlight in what I've been doing on the method of systematic theology, they impose, I believe, on our use of the hypothesis a twofold requirement. First of all, the objects intended in the statement of the hypothesis itself must be spoken of in categories based in interiorly and religiously differentiated consciousness. The categories employed to frame the hypothesis itself are derived, not basic. In Monaghan's words, general basic terms name conscious and intentional operations. General basic relations name elements in the dynamic structure linking operations and generating states. Special basic terms name God's gift of love and Christian witness. Derived terms and relations name the objects known in operations and correlative to states. For every term and relation, there will exist a corresponding element in intentional consciousness. It's a very heavy demand. More specifically, since the four-point hypothesis speaks of realities that are named in special categories, the base of these categories in religiously differentiated consciousness must be specified as carefully as possible. But general categories will be important also, even in unpacking the hypothesis in its own terms. Why? Because the divine relations, at the beginning of the hypothesis, the divine relations are based in the divine processions. The processions are understood by analogy with intelligible emanations of word and love in human consciousness. And the categories that express those emanations are not peculiar to theology, but rather are fundamental to the basic and total science, whose fundamental components long have been put forth in insight. But a differentiation in terms of religious experience is also required, and particularly for the second and third points of the hypothesis, those that have to do with sanctifying grace and the habit of charity as created participations respectively of active and passive inspiration. The second requirement builds on an argument that I've offered elsewhere that is in harmony with elements that appear in Lonergan's papers at the time of his breakthrough to functional specialization. And that is this, that systematics is to assume the general form of a theology of history. Building on that means that the primary general categories must be those that enable us to formulate a theory of the complex dialectical process of human history. These categories include preeminently those that Lonergan has employed to speak of progress, decline, and redemption as constituting the basic structure of history and the structure of the human good that he has proposed most clearly in Method and Theology. But complementing these are other categories that can be found in his work and added to his analysis of history. Principally, I believe, the scale of values as explaining the intelligible ongoing relations among three complex dialectical processes in the subject, culture, and community, and so as providing further details of the dynamics of progress and decline in history. This mediation of general and special categories in a theology of history is required if we are to relate the doctrines of Trinity, Incarnation, Grace, and Eschatology concretely to the processes of history, and to add to the core systematic spheres of Trinity, Incarnation, Grace, and Eschatology the understanding of doctrines regarding revelation, redemption, the church, the sacraments, and the praxis of religious persons, of Christians, of Catholics, and of the Christian churches. Those doctrines on revelation, redemption, church, sacraments, and praxis are not explicitly included in the core focal meanings contained in the four-point hypothesis, but positions in their regard are obviously demanded in a systematic theology, and those positions cannot be developed without a theory of history. Even the four-point hypothesis contains a demand for expansion into a theory of history, because at the core of the hypothesis is the theology not only of the immanent Trinity, four real divine relations really identical with divine being, but also and especially of the divine missions. Divine missions are the Trinity in history. The missions are identical with the divine processions, joined to created external terms, but are the consequent conditions of the fact that the divine processions are also missions. Fifth, history and the special categories. This second requirement can be further illustrated by turning again to Mansour's test and appealing to Lonergan's five sets of special theological categories. But now to argue that the four-point hypothesis will not be able to integrate the second, the fourth, and the fifth of these sets into an overall systematic conception, and will be able to integrate only part of the first. The first set of special categories is derived from religious experience, and I quote Lonergan here. These categories will emerge from studies of religious interiority, historical, phenomenological, psychological, sociological. There is needed in the theologian the spiritual development that will enable one both to enter into the experience of others and to frame the terms and relations that will express that experience. A second set has to do not with the subject, but, quoting Lonergan, with subjects, their togetherness in community, service, and witness, the history of the salvation that is rooted in a being in love, and the function of this history in promoting the reign of God in the world. Paper, the history of the salvation and the function of this history are italicized. A third set, quoting Lonergan, moves from our loving to the loving source of our love. The Christian tradition makes explicit our implicit intending of God in all our intending, a speaking of the Spirit that is given to us, of the Son who redeemed us, of the Father who sent the Son, and with the Son sends the Spirit, and of our future destiny when we shall know, not as in a glass darkly, but face to face. A fourth set differentiates authentic and inauthentic humanity, and authentic and inauthentic Christianity. To the unauthentic person or Christian, what appears authentic is the unauthentic. Here, then, is the root of division, opposition, controversy, denunciation, bitterness, hatred, violence. And a fifth set regards progress, decline, and redemption. And again, just to quote what Lonergan says about that fifth set, as human authenticity promotes progress and human unauthenticity generates decline, so Christian authenticity, which is the love of others that does not shrink from self-sacrifice and suffering, is the sovereign means for overcoming evil. Christians bring about the reign of God in the world not only by doing good, but also by overcoming evil with good. Not only is there the progress of humankind, but also there is development and progress within Christianity itself. And as there is development, so too there is decline. And as there is decline, there also is the problem of undoing it, of overcoming evil with good, not only in the world, but also in the church. So those are the five sets. Now, my point is this, that obviously the third set matches the four-point hypothesis almost point by point, so that it can safely be said that that set can be mapped without remainder onto the hypothesis. Moreover, I believe that the hypothesis provides a key to clarifying religious experience, and so I think it's relevant to elements of the first set of special categories, because I think there's a twofold movement that we have to differentiate clearly of the that corresponds to our participation in active and passive spiration. But mapping the other three sets onto the hypothesis is not only more difficult, I think it's impossible. One can relate the other three sets to the third set, and so to the hypothesis. But any attempt to go further would be an attempt to reduce the other three sets to the third, or to regard the generic theorem of the hypothesis as sufficient for the full solution. The other three sets, subjects in community, authentic and inauthentic humanity and Christianity, progress, decline, and redemption, demand that a framework that locates within or in relation to the dialectical dynamics of history, the four created supernatural realities, it demands that framework. The categories that detail the relation of these created supernatural realities to history are required if we are to have a systematics of revelation, which, as Lonergan says, introduces a new meaning into history, a systematics of redemption, of the church, of the sacraments, and of Christian praxis. So the four-point hypothesis has to be placed in history. Speaking as it does of the divine missions certainly locates it in history, but it has to function within a conception of history that will enable the integration of the second, fourth, and fifth sets of special categories into the overall conception. The created contingent external terms that make it possible that there are divine missions are not enough to allow for that historical integration. The divine missions have to be related in a thematic and explicit manner to the dynamics of history. What does it mean to progress, decline, and history, and redemption in the concrete specifics, that the mission of the Word and the mission of the Holy Spirit have taken place and are taking place? That can be done only by developing a theological theory of history. The four-point hypothesis in itself doesn't tell us anything about what the incarnation and the indwelling of the Holy Spirit have to do with historical progress and decline. Whereas revelation, redemption, the church, the sacraments, and Christian praxis cannot be understood apart from historical progress and decline. Let me quote something from Lonergan in 1962, the Institute at Regis College on the method of theology, which we're doing the CDs of at the present time. In a discussion period at that institute, he expressed the conviction that the sacraments and the church are two areas in systematic theology in which an enormous amount, his own work, an enormous amount of work needs to be done. In fact, he said, there is needed even doctrinal development in these areas. And here, this is the quote from what he said in response to a question. The fundamental developments are the Trinitarian doctrine, in which the key element is the consubstantial, Christological doctrine, one person and two natures, the idea of the supernatural, habit and act. There is then the field in which the categories are not yet fully developed. For example, categories as to the instrumental causality of the sacraments, they have to be developed more fully. There is also everything regarding history and the mystical body and the church. All these need further development. So as he himself wrote at the time of his breakthrough to the notion of functional specialization, a contemporary systematic theology in its entirety will be a theological theory of history. Or as he put it in on the page where the breakthrough seems to have been recorded, the mediated object of systematics is Vishitta. We may conclude then that the basic organizing systematic conception has to contain the fundamental elements of a theological theory of history. And we can find those, I think, to a large extent in Lonergan's own writings as the outflow of the basic and total science. Okay, finally, just glimpsing some implications of this. I hope that we can already glimpse that there are enormous theological implications of Lonergan's twofold methodological insistence on basing everything in interiority and on locating everything in relation to history. It is one thing to transpose, for example, Trinitarian theology into categories dictated by interiorly and religiously differentiated consciousness. We are already familiar with the historical antecedents of such a transposition in the psychological analogies first of Augustine and then of Aquinas. Lonergan in Divinarum Personarum and then in De Deo Trino transposes the psychological analogy into categories explicitly derived from interiorly differentiated consciousness. That's beyond Aquinas. It's explicit. But to add to this requirement, the additional demand that all of this material must be formulated in relation to and in terms of a theory of history adds an entirely new dimension. The direct impact is on that portion of Trinitarian theology that treats the divine missions, and particularly the mission of the Holy Spirit, but the implications are more far-reaching. The theory of history, based on the interrelations of the levels of value from above, religious, personal, cultural, social, vital, proposes that the recurrent intelligent emanation of the word of authentic value judgments and of acts of love in human consciousness, that's at the level of personal value, is due to the grace of the mission of the Holy Spirit, religious value, and is also the source of the making of history, of historical progress through schemes of recurrence in the realms of cultural, social, and vital value. That the mission of the Holy Spirit is the eternal procession of the Holy Spirit joined to a created contingent external term. That is the consequent condition of the procession being also a mission, or of the proceeding Holy Spirit within the Godhead also being sent ad extra. Thus, the intelligent emanation in God of the Holy Spirit, the eternal procession in God of the Holy Spirit, joined to the created, contingent, consequent, external terms that are sanctifying grace and the habit of charity, and to the operative movements that are known as auxilium divinum or actual grace, the eternal, intelligent emanation of the Spirit in God as also gift in history is the ultimate condition of possibility of any consistent or recurrent intelligent emanation of authentic judgments of value and schemes of recurrence rooted in acts of love in human beings. This collaboration of intelligent processions, divine and human, is the condition of the possibility of the consistent, authentic performance of what Lonergan called the normative source of meaning in history. And if such personal value conditions the possibility of functioning schemes of recurrence in the realms of cultural and then social and then vital values, if that normative source functioning commonly is the origin of progress in history, then the mission of the Holy Spirit, which is identical with the eternal procession of the Spirit joined to the created, contingent, consequent term of charity, and so the Spirit as gift is the very source of progress in history. Conversely, wherever genuine progress measured by fidelity to the scale of values takes place, the spirit is present and active. A combination of the four-point hypothesis with the theory of history thus enables us to relate Trinitarian theology and even the theology of the immanent Trinity directly to the processes not only of individual sanctification but also of human historical unfolding. The discernment of the mission of the Holy Spirit is thus the most important ingredient in humankind's taking responsibility for the guidance of history.